Session number 25278, Mr. John McGurk, reels one end two of two. Left channel and right channel are interviewee, as the interviewer's mic does not seem to be working.
Mr. John McGurk, reel one. Can you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. McGurk?
I was born in 1920 in 40 Bristol Street in Edinburgh.
And could you tell us a bit about your family and your childhood? You know, what your parents did for a living, what sort of life you had when you were young?
Well, we were 8 years of family, eventually, you know. And I've still got seven living in my family. My youngest brother, he just retired last year, 65. So he's now 66, and he's the youngest of the family, and he's still eight, seven are still living. There was eight, but unfortunately, Alec, he lost his wife a few years ago, and he more or less went under the weather on the fact he lost his wife, and he took one or two things, and he went to hospital, and that was it.
Now, what about your parents? What did your parents do for a living, or your dad?
My dad was in transport. He was a tram driver, and in between he would maybe do the buses, you know. Maybe if he was short of men, he would go into the central garage and then beat up the bus. And he was in this garage, the tram car garage, which is now away now. They've only got the two garages, the central, the marine, and one about Longstone, three obviously.
So he was in steady employment between the trams and the buses?
Yeah, so he was aye.
How well off was the family? I mean, were you comfortably enough off? I mean, obviously it must have been quite hard with eight of you.
Well, no, well, I was eight, yes. We got through right now, but the wee shop, my dad, he worked his cell to, and he opened up a wee shop for bicycles and that, you know, car, bicycle hire. And my mother opened me a shop in the Potter Row, and but unfortunately she was given all the family stayed around at the Potter Row, aunties and uncles and what have you, and she was giving the stuff away, and she was losing making money, she was losing money, you know. Not for a bugger, so she was anyway. And eventually we went to but at the time we seemed to get houses without any bother. My dad, the farm was growing up, so he kept moving about the family into different houses.
And we were all in Edinburgh.
We were doing at Lock End, Slade Drive, and that particular time they were moving in Craig and Tinney, and we were getting all the rats coming into the house. And my dad, he got the rats and sent them back to the corporation, to the council, and we eventually got out of there and back to Bristol Street, and I finished up in 59 Bristol Street before I finished 59, that's right. And of course the war broke out.
It's quite a big house.
The big house.
Now what about your education? Tell us where you were educated.
I was actually educated in Bristol Street School and Rettering School, and I finished up at James Clark's. That's the secondary school, you know, at Leonard's, St Leonard's.
And how did you do at school, would you say? You know?
Well, I'd so and so, you know, I didn't know bad.
Was there any subject you particularly liked or disliked, or, you know?
Well, I just took it as it came, you know. And I was no bad at my lessons and that, but as I say,
you didn't stay on after 14 then?
No.
So you'd leave school in 1934.
That's right, 1940.
What about outside of school, sports or recreations, or did you have any big hobbies or sports?
The only hobby I had was piping.
Right from a young age?
Then. Yes, sir.
Now, what had got you interested in the bagpipes, is it? Look.
I was in College Street Church, and that's where I learnt my piping, when I was in the Boys' Brigade. I was in the early boys first, then went into the Boys' Brigade, and a pipe major, Mr. Donaldson, he stayed at the Mary Bank. He came and done all the piping for us, played the pipes. And of course, I still was 16.
Now, how difficult is it to learn the pipes as a young lad? I mean, what skills do you need to play?
You didn't need any skills. You've got to just concentrate on once you get the notes off of your chanter and that, you know, and you read the music, and it's like play the piano, the banjo, or the fiddle. You go start from scratch. And that's how you get it.
So it wasn't that difficult an instrument for you?
Well, I didn't find it very difficult, and I must admit I seemed to get further on with the piping, and I was quite a good piper when I finished up with the Boys' Brigade.
Now, what else did the Boys' Brigade, you were part of the Boys' Brigade band, were you? What other instruments were there? Was it pipes and...
Just pipes and drums, aye.
And where would the band perform?
Well, actually, by the hall in the College Street, and with the little march up down here. But next day, Sunday, maybe had the parades and that. We used to form up in George Street and watch for George Street round into the church, and the border boys behind us and that, you know, for parades. You know, and we had a yearly parade with the Boys' Brigade along Prince's Street and that, you know. And the Lord Provost, or whoever it was, you know, was to the salute. And we finished up in National Hall, and we had a ceremony there. And then we marched back, and that was it.
Now, what else did you do with the Boys' Brigade? Or was it mainly the band for you?
This was my band. And I couldn't be bothered with football or even dancing. I never even went dancing.
And what uniform did you have for the Boys' Brigade? Did you have a uniform?
You just had the usual sharp and your shirt, trousers and that, pillbox hat.
And that's all you had?
That's it.
Now, when you left school about 1934, what job did you take? What was your dad? What was you and your dad's plan?
I worked in Coburn Street. It was actually a bird merchant, and it sold birds. Bird seeds. It sold birds or dogs and that, you know. And I was giving bird seed to over the town. And
on a bicycle?
No, I used to get the bus and that.
And did you enjoy the work?
Yes, well, as I say, I was only getting about 14 bob a week or something. And I finished up that, and I went into North British Rubber Mill, into the turning room, and of course...
Into the what room?
It was called the turning room, turning. You know, the boys on the lace, they were turning, like so, different things, like so, even the pipe chanter. And different things were turning on the laces, and they made combs and that, you know. And I got the job doing all the scrap through the big band saw, you know, cutting all the scrap up and put it into the boxes and that.
And did you enjoy that any better?
Well, I quite enjoyed it. I didn't. It was only about a couple of years before I was called up, because it was this time when I left the Boys' Brigade. At 16, one of my father's pals was named Jimmy Duffy, and he was a sergeant in the 79th Battalion of the Royal Scots. So he says to me, "What you got to do now, Joe?" He said, "You know, left the band," and I said, "Well, I'll probably get another pipe man, you know." He said, "Well, why don't come and join the Royal Scots?" So. Yeah, I said, "Look, I'm too young. I'm only 16. You know, he says, "Well, say you're 17. So I went, I did go down to East Claremont Street.
To which street?
East Claremont. East Claremont Street. That's where the drill hall was, you see. And I seen Pipe Major Stark. He was the pipe major at the time. And he took me on the chanter. But unfortunately, he says to me, I've got a full quantum. I've got a full pipe man now, he says. But I'll put it in the first list if anybody packs it in, you see. So anyway, I came out to my sister, looked at me, I says, he's got a full compliment, and he's put me back, I said, oh, hang on, I'm going to tell him, you've got a Jenny Scots Guards, and you want to be but Jewish before you go to Guards. So anyway, he went back and seen Alan Stark, and so Alan said, well, if that's the case, just tell me to come in and I'll get him into the pipe band. Because every year after that was always, when he got to join the Scots Guards. I had no intention of joining the Scots Guards. Of course, this time, of course, I'd done 4 years with the...
So, which battalion were you joining? This was the...
79th Battalion of the Royal Scots.
7th?
79th.
And their drill hall was East Clare?
79th Highland Battalion.
Of the Royal Scots, yeah.
Royal Scots.
And they were based at East
Clare. East Clare Street, actually, aye.
And tell me about, you must have been kitted out. How did they kit you out?
Well, we had everything. Everything the army had. You know, we had our ordinary khaki uniform. Only trouble, it was up to your neck, you know, before you got the... And they always got into trouble because you always wanted to undo your neck, you know. And we always got into bloody trouble with that. And we feel, any people were, especially when we were abroad during the war and that, after the war, if it was, we were in debt mode. And of course, we're doing to the town.
I'll come to that because we keep it in order, but you run on a bit there. So, what else would you get? You got your uniform, what else did they give you?
And I had my kilts. And of course, the pipe band, the pipe band had the Royal Stuart tartan and the kilt, and the boys, the drummers had the hunting Stuart tartan and trousers, you know.
Now, what did you think of the kilt? Was that your first time you'd had one?
That was the first time, yes.
What did you think of it? Because, you know,
it's a marvellous outfit, even to look at. You know, I've got two kilts in the house here, they can't wear the bloody things, you know.
Well, what was so good about them? Why did you like them?
Because being in uniform with a pipe band, you had your full dress on, you know, you had your busby, your feather bonnet, I should say, and you had your big scarf on the back of your... Yeah, no, my memory's quite buggery.
It's all right, you're fine.
As I say, it's fantastic to even be dressed up in the full uniform with a pipe band. You know, you still see them yet, the black watch and that, even on the tattoo, you know.
Now, what training did you have with the 7th and 9th?
Well, I didn't do much training to start off with. I was putting right into the pipe band. Of course, we were very busy with the band. Because we used to play all the town, at different, especially during the summertime and that. You know, we're playing Prince Street two or three times a year. We go to East Links, we go to all the different parks and that. Sockton Park, that's just on the corner there. I used to play there, and we used to quite enjoy it. But the training, well, the training was more or less the same as we did in the Boys' Brigade. You know, you just get the marching and... Right turn, left turn, and saluting to the front, and all this carry on.
How did you take to drill? What did you think?
I say enjoy it. Enjoy it.
Did you understand the point of it at the time?
Well, it's more or less, say, discipline, isn't it? That's what it's more or less for discipline.
And you took to it?
I used to enjoy it, I did.
But you didn't get any weapons training at the time?
Well, you did. You had to do your annual shooting. For your bounty night every year.
What do you remember? How did they teach you to shoot the rifle? At Lee Enfield, wasn't it?
At Lee Enfield, aye.
How did they teach you?
Well, They had the sergeants and that, they put you through them all. And how to, when you went there, of course, you had to clean your rifles and that. And keep them spick and span, you know. And I must say, I quite enjoyed it. I was having a very good shot, mind you. Not into the, we should go into Drakehorn or other places we went to.
Why weren't you a good shot, you think?
Well, I didn't care. I think it was the idea of the rifle against your shoulder, you used to give that bang, you know. But I was, because I finished up with the paper, as A Company's paper.
Before the war?
No, this is after the war.
No.
After the war.
During the war, before the war. So, what other weapons were you trained before the war?
That's all.
Rifle?
Just a rifle, right.
And mainly drill, rifle, and then these band practice.
As I say, I say.
And how often would you have to go into the drill hall? Was it just once a week?
Well, no, we used to do weekends and that. And maybe we should do a Wednesday night for practice, for charter practice and that, you know. And that's how it quite, well, we used to quite enjoy that. Until we...
And what about, did you go away to summer camps?
Yes, uh-huh.
What were they like?
They were quite nice. We had to do wheels. Our last camp actually was Llasbeffa. That's 1939. That was the last one, and we flooded out to, I think we changed Billy Will Camp 3 times that year. And we normally come, I think we came back, but the air could blow, soaking, you know, but whatever. And three come back on Saturday, we came back on the Friday, came home.
And what would you do on camp? What exactly were you doing? What sort of training were you doing?
Well, because me being a paper, I was in a paper band all the time, you know.
You were at headquarters company?
No, I was headquarters company, but I finished up in A Company's paper. Came with six papers.
That's later, though.
Uh-huh.
So you didn't actually do any of the training. Well, did they train you as stretcher bearers? Because the bands were often meant to be stretcher bearers.
Well, we were supposed to be stretcher bearers, but we knew what that is. Anybody could carry a bloody stretcher, you know.
So there was no training?
No training, no.
No first aid training? You didn't get first aid?
No.
Now, were you aware that war was coming?
Well, it wasn't until the latter part. Of course, we came and going across and coming back again, saying everything was okay, you know, and what have you. And of course, we kind of, you must, I'll tell you something, we didn't have a bloody thing before the war, you know, but actually, all you had was a rifle, but for motors and what have you. And that bloody thing.
Did you think the war would involve you? I mean, were you expecting the war?
Well, I was expecting to go to war, enough.
Now, what do you remember of the outbreak of war? Did you hear the broadcast?
We were called up before the war started, actually.
When was that? Do you remember the date?
I can't mind. But 1939. It was just after we came up for Llasbeffa, actually, for our camp. We started to get things together, and we get mobilised. And
so, what happened when you got mobilised? Do you remember how it was done?
Well, we went down to the drill hall, and we all got a fire ring for mobilisation, and then we went sent home and told them we'd get in touch with when we actually needed you, you know. And eventually, when we did get in touch with the drill hall, and nobody knew where we were going, we were printed from East Lambeth Street, the pipe band and the military band, up to the railway station. No man was there, he was bloody well tearing his bloody eyes out, you know, quite a war, his son was quite a war. You know.
Was this still before the outbreak?
It's just during the outbreak, just before the outbreak.
Before, so yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think we were going across, we hadn't the foggiest idea of where we were going. We got into a train at Waverley Station, and I think we were going across the Ford Bridge at the time, and that was when war was declared.
Did you hear the broadcast?
I didn't hear it, no. I just read it through the papers, and we finished over in Fife. We finished over at Kinghorn, Burntyland, and Aran, but that was there for about 2 months.
And which one did you go to?
We went to Kinghorn.
And what were you doing at Kinghorn?
Well, as I say, well, we should do a lot of marching and that. And we should go for one, maybe about, maybe about 20 miles marching, you know. And go for one area, maybe if we got 4 KOSBs or 5 KOSBs, and round back into our training base again, you know, at Kinghorn.
How did you find the route marches? Well,
of course, being a paper, actually, A Company's paper, and I paid him for him all the time, you know.
That was when he became A Company, right at the start of the war?
After the war. Just before the... After we got called up. Because a lot of the boys in the band were far too old, you see, so they had to get rid of him, and we had to take their place, the younger chaps. And I was put into A Company. And from there, I was there till the war finished in 1945.
Now, what was your job as piper of A Company, would you say? What were your duties?
Well, you played the valley in the morning, and you played the meal calls, breakfast, dinner and tea and that. And if the officer's mess, you played the officer's mess. And that's more as your duty as the A Company's paper. But eventually, if there's big marches and that, we all formed as a pipe band. You know, we always had the six pipers, and then we had the other boys in the ranks who came into the pipe band and made up the drummers and the pipes. And I remember you have go to church and that, what have you. You know.
And did you enjoy the job?
I quite enjoyed it at the time, I.
And so you were at Kinghorn. Anything happened at Kinghorn? You were there about 2 months, you reckon?
Well, each company took turn on Inchkeith. That was the island of the force. Inchkeith, and because me being Company Piper, all I did was every day I came across to Edinburgh with a boat, went to Murrayfield along the road there, and the right good put my chit in for the rations for the A Company on the Inchkeith, and they should take it down to the harbour, and all I did was go back to the harbour, lift it onto the boat, and take it over to the Inchkeith.
And what was it like on Inchkeith? Where were you billeted? It's only a small island, isn't it?
It is, but the billets, fair enough. Tin roofs and that, you know what I mean? And it took you exactly an hour to go right round the island. You know, when you took a turn going round. I never did it, because I was a paper at the time. And I did all the paper, and maybe Rivali, as I say, and all the mill calls and what have you. And
what were you meant to be doing on the island? I mean,
we're here just in case anything happened, because anybody come up the force, you know. They used to have a boom from one end of the force across to the mainland, and if any ships go through that boom, used to fire about a shot across to the bows. A matter of fact, I think there's still a shell in one of the buildings down at Leith, where fire the shot across the bow to see that boat we're going into the boom, you know. And we used to get to the first trip when the first air raid with the Germans trying to bomb the bridge and that.
While you were in it,
Inchkeith at that time, I.
What do you remember of the air raid?
And of course, all the officers all pretty well themselves, with the brain guns, shooting at the planes and what have you. And of course, they're all put the shells there. It's a memento. You know, it was funny at the time.
Did they hit anything?
I don't think so. No.
Was it comfortable living? I mean, what were you actually living in on the island? Was it billets or?
But tin huts, you know. bullets. We're quite good, the bullets and that. I ain't told there yet. I expect there will be.
Anything else happened while you were on the island?
That's about all, no. Just, as I say, the tiller fired a shot across the boom on the boat before it went into the boom, right? And as I say, aircraft were trying to bomb the Force Bridge and what have you. Because we had this, that was the railway bridge at the time. We didn't have the road bridge at that time, you know.
And so, after you were there, you were on Inverkeith a while, and then you went back to Kinghorn, did you? Or?
Well, went back to Kinghorn, then we finished up, and we moved from here to Yeovil, I think it was. And it tells you on this book here, actually.
Yeah, what do you remember, though? You went to Yeovil?
I went to Yeovil.
And when would that be? After about...
1940, 41. See, 1940, we crossed to France in 1940.
Well, what happened to Yeovil? Yeovil was first, was it?
Aye. But it... I'm sure it would be, aye.
And what happened at Yeovil?
Well, we just more or less training, you know. Then training all the time. And I commend, of course, one of the lads in the... But it was, of course, you know, at Somerset, so cider was drinking down there, you know. And this one of our chaps in the regiment, he went into the pub, of course, he was drinking cider, and he went to his bloody head, he directed the bloody priests.
Did you drink cider?
No. It's one thing I never drank any cider, but I did have a wee bit. Maybe I didn't think very much of that particular time, you know.
And you were training. Now, when did you go to France?
In 1940.
Do you know when? Just before the fighting started?
No, just after Dunkirk.
After Dunkirk.
We went across here to go, as it says in the book here, we went across just after Dunkirk to... We landed in St. Malo. And the trip only lasted about 5 bloody days. And because...
What do you remember of the crossing?
It was all right in the crossing, going across. And as I say, I was A Company inspector, and I was actually chewing up the pipes at St. Malo, so to march off to where we were going. I didn't know exactly where we were going.
What did you cross on?
A big game.
You don't know the name?
I don't know him. But, no.
And there was no trouble when you were crossing?
No trouble. No.
And what was your impression when you landed at St. Malo? I
was quite surprised, you know, because it was a lovely day and I was piping, I was chewing up the pipes and that to march off, and this Frenchman came across. I don't know if he was French, he might have been British. But he handed me a handful of nuts, French nuts, you know. So I was on the only one in the company had French nuts. And it came in handy because we had these girls that came in by making tea and that and buns and what have you. And I had, because me had the francs, I gave them to the boys and me. Spent it that way.
And why had he given you this money?
I didn't care. He just gave me this money because I was piping.
Just as a tip, as a sort of... And how did the French treat you, generally?
Well, we weren't there very long, to be quite honest with you. Because we came and marched off. Of course, I was being piping in front. I wanted to go to the left-hand side of the road. And, of course, what happened was... The F.L. Johnson, who was the Major Johnson, he had this big crooked stick, you know, and duck, I'm going to say, keep to this side, you know. And we marched about 3 or 4 miles, and we finished up in this big field. So we had to bivvy sack there. And of course, as usual, it started to rain. Because I changed from the kilt into trousers, and put my trousers and my kilt in my pipe books, onto the PU, and I never seen it again after that.